And we're doing a look at tarot. Because I think it's nice for people to learn a lot more about our own culture and the various, you know, mystical or meditational or traditions within our own culture that tend to have sort of gotten sidetracked over history. It's nice to have a look at them and realize that there are lots of ways to approach exploring spirituality. Don't you think so?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just my opinion, is it? And don't agree with me just because I'm right. Because, you know, people, when they start studying something, like I remember when I was 14, 15, going on toward 15, and I went to this church, and there was this, because I was always interested in different churches and things, I went to this church, and I found this minister who really was just speaking from his heart and telling the truth, and I mean, I think many ministers are, but this one actually spoke directly to people. Absolutely amazed me, so I immediately became a Christian. And then I went through various other careers after that, some of which we don't need to talk about. And then again, when I met my beloved teacher, Ananda Bodhi, you know, after a little bit of heart wrestling and ego wrestling and arm wrestling, I became absolutely a Buddhist. And it's so easy to be swept away when something opens your own heart and opens your own mind, and you suddenly notice that there's more than one way to view things and that there isn't one right. So that when you meet a context that takes you beyond your usual judgments, it's so easy to become a new convert, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a new convert, it's so easy to become sectarian, don't you think? And so that quality of actually respecting other than your path gets to be almost intellectual, because there's this little sense of pride in your own heart, but of course I know that I have the right path. Oh, I'm very tolerant. Oh, you're a Christian. Oh, I'm very tolerant. Oh, you're a Buddhist. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that once you have some, yeah? So that once you have some foundation in a teaching, I find it very useful to go and study another teaching. Not necessarily to compare them, but to open your mind so that you can have respect, you know, for all the teachings. I mean, I get a certain amount of flack from some of my peers for my attitude.
It's a good attitude.
Thank you. But it's the only one that I feel comfortable with. I don't feel comfortable telling people that I am the best teacher or this is the only way. Because if I was the best teacher, we'd all be in trouble. You know? Do you know what I mean? Do you understand? Or should I explain that? You're not taping this, are you? Oh, God, here we go again. Wait until I start on the tarot. Okay, you want to tape this? It's up to you. Okay. If I am the best teacher, then we're all in trouble. Because then you're just going to sit on your asses, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be... But what about when I need a teaching? When are you going to teach me? Right? No, it's not like that. There are very few full teachers. They appear centuries apart from each other. It's very difficult. But if we honor the same thing and we work toward it together, all of our experience makes an approximation of a teacher as we work together with our aspiration. In my opinion, that should include also being open to all the paths of all humans that are doing that. So therefore, we're studying tarot. That was a long-winded explanation, but I think you got it. So we have so far covered or looked at, I'm just really doing just a little glimpse of them, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
Not going in any great depth in the major arcana of the tarot deck. We have so far looked at the Magus and the Fool.
Mm-hmm.
The Fool first and then the Magus. So tonight we're going to look at the card called the High Priestess.
We did a little bit on that one last time.
Did we?
Because you were comparing them.
Oh yeah, but mm-hmm. I wasn't actually addressing, I was just sort of talking about the Magician in,
mm-hmm.
wasn't
yeah.
I? In relation to the
mm-hmm.
High Priestess.
Mm-hmm.
I think. That's what I meant to be doing.
Okay.
Anyway. So I'm looking for my High Priestess card. And card for now.
Where are you?
Maybe you can find the High Priestess card and the Fool card in there. So if you remember, the Fool card is basically wandering around. But wherever he wanders, it's the edge of a cliff. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And he is always about to fall over the cliff into manifestation because he's unmanifest. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And his robe is what color? Underneath, his bottom robe, the one closest to his skin, is white. Do you remember? And his top robe is multicolored, and it has all these different different symbols on it that are like wheels and he's got this funky looking dog and his staff which he holds over his shoulder is black and he's got that and he's holding a flower in this one. Did you find him there?
No, not either yet.
And the Magician is standing in a bower, so the Fool is walking, always just about on the edge of the cliff and always about to fall over. The unmanifest, the unborn, the potential, the non-separate. Then you have the Magician. This is the I Am. This is Adam, who God had named things. Remember that? I don't know. Are you familiar with the Old Testament or the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
Where God is checking out to see. Remember I was talking about it saying that Adam, you got one? Give it to me. Thanks. Adam was, God wanted to know whether Adam was a working copy, so he said, okay, Adam, name. And if Adam could name, that was what was important. So the difference between you see the Fool in these two cards. Here he's about to pick the fruit, but not quite. And he's like a child.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog is like black. Here the dog is white and bang and nipping at his ankles almost. The dog would represent what in you know, would represent the consciousness of matter, like the DNA consciousness, the aspiration to know before it's manifesting. So here it's black. And he's about to pick the fruit of the tree of life, that is to say, become separate here in this one. Did you find the magus?
The magician?
Yeah. So they look very different, but they're talking about the same thing, these two cards. Remember we covered both of them, do you remember that? Just catching you up, because there's a couple of you that weren't here before. And then we got two, then and the fool's number is zero, because he really doesn't belong anywhere, or he is everywhere. Or, you know, fool is wandering in and out, always just out of sight throughout all of the major arcana. You know, it's like the transcendent in a way. It's always present, except you just, but right now I'm writing something. But right now. It's always present, but I'm just going to sneeze. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Not sure?
No, I'm sure.
I'm talking to Pat.
Oh.
Mm. She's got that pensive look in her face. She's pensing.
That kind of quality that it's like you see something, then you don't see it. It's like you just catch it out of the corner of your eye.
No, you be something. But then you see being and seeing. The fool represents consciousness before form. So not subject-object consciousness. The magician represents the first move into being able to name. The namer.
That's a magus?
Oh. Yeah, the magus or the fool. I mean, sorry, the magus, sorry, the magician,
okay.
Yeah.
So you said before, like it was Adam, and you said before God named him, was it? You said?
No, Adam, in isn't it in Genesis? I'm pretty sure it's in Genesis.
Right.
Beautiful story about God making Adam and then checking out to see. Like, these are my words, of course, you can tell by how crude they are, checking out to see whether he was a working model. Because there are also other stories that are sort of like unaccepted in the usual Bible about God having made two or three attempts. But you can find these other mythologies and stories, as some of them come from quite old too. And then, but Adam was able to name. So God brought all the animals in front of Adam, and Adam named them.
Mm.
So that meant he was a working copy. See, he was like a reasonable, he was a model, there was some shelf life in him. He was going to be okay for a while. And that is his great potency, his great power. And you notice that here, the magus is holding a white rod that's two-ended. And here on his chest, he is not holding any rod, but on his chest he has the caduceus, sign of, isn't that the sign of Mercury? The one who travels between, the messenger of the gods, travels between heaven and earth. And that's the work of Adam. Like, he's in the bower, but his, if you remember when we were talking about the magician, that his role is to name in relation to the higher, to the transcendent. When Adam names in relation to self-grasping, the naming gets him into some problems. Is this clear?
Mm-hmm.
But the role of the Adam, is to remembering the source of all creativity, name in relation to that. So therefore, whatever it is he sees has a relationship to the divine. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So then we get, well, what does he see? And then we get herself. The state of knowing sees the state of being. Right? There's a decided kind of lapse of ripple of, yeah, you guys get what I just said here. Am I being too obscure? Should
no.
I just go to the book
no.
instead
no.
of my
no.
summary?
So
is
the
it
state of knowing is what?
The state of knowing
yeah.
sees the state of being.
Okay.
But the state of being is not a naming state. It's not an object state. So the state of knowing sees the reflection that is drawn to it from the state of knowing. The state, when you have a certain knowing, you see according to your knowing. The state of being reflects the knower. The state of being, she, reflects the knower. So if the knower is actually operating based on the awareness of the divine, then the state of being is not separate from the divine. Somehow I'm not being very
so the opposite
clear tonight. Yep. Like, yep. Where there's a passion, there's a perception. Where there's a perception, there's a passion. When you don't like somebody or you're blaming someone else, you're looking at your own problem. Always. 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 Don't like it? Geez, that's too bad. It's going to come up everywhere. No matter where you go. Have you noticed? You can pass laws. Still going to come up. So this is how they do that in the tarot. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? You got the fool, which is nowhere and everywhere. You got the first state of and the fool is like, if there were 22 of us here in this room, and each of us represented one of the major arcana of the tarot, the 21 of us would be arranged in some sort of spiral, and the 22nd, the fool, would be wandering everywhere totally aimlessly, and like, you know, stand on his head and like, you know, hang from the ceiling and, you know, walk out the window and come back in the door, and but never quite be able to be pinned down. The presence is felt, but never quite be able to be pinned down. And then the one who can name or knows, names something, then leaves the room. Then reappears, names something else, then leaves the room. Isn't that what knowing and being do together? You know something and then you let go. You go from knowing to unknowing to knowing to unknowing, don't you? You should. And then we come to what I'm talking about tonight. See, because I haven't been talking about anything up to now. The High Priestess. And I made a couple of notes. I wonder if I can read them, of things I particularly felt were interesting. So the first thing I wrote, which I've already talked about, I said, why is Adam the namer, or the magician the namer? To identify what is reflected by the depth. To reflect what is, to name what is reflected by Eve. To name what is reflected by Ayatana consciousness, the storehouse consciousness that contains all possibilities. And one of the names for the high priestess is the water of all possibilities. From her robe, you see this blue robe? Water, the entire water of the river of life flows through all the other cards from this card. Starts flowing here. She sits between the two pillars that are Boaz and Joachim, and she is actually sitting between knowing and being. Behind her is veiled, and it's veiled in the form, remember, we looked briefly at the tree of life that was the drawing of the seven symbols of the tree, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So the veil behind her in this particular drawing is symbolic of the tree of life. But the richness of it, like pomegranates, you know how many seeds those damn pomegranates have? They're like a womb in the explosive state, aren't they? And red and juicy. But not just pomegranates, there's palm trees too. So it's sort of like a combination of the two. So the behind her is veiled. And she sits between knowing and being. She doesn't have anything to do with linear time. But from her, many things flow. The consensus of opinion often is that she should not have the moon. The moon should be in the next card. Or which card? I don't remember right now. I have a mother of a headache, so you'll have to excuse me for my lapses. She's sitting on a cube in this card. She has the crown of Isis on her head. So to identify what is reflected by the depth, that's why Adam is the namer. And what value results from such naming? I find this so beautiful. The value of naming what is reflected is to understand the desire of the namer.
Understand the desire of
the namer.
The namer.
Yeah. When you name something, you understand your own desire as the namer. In Tibetan tradition, that's the fourth initiation of the four highest initiations. To understand that you yourself give birth to God. Here, why is naming so important? To understand the desire of the namer. When you praise or blame, you're looking at your own desire and you're naming it so you can see it. That is so beautiful to me. Perhaps not to you. I find it very beautiful. Therefore, all things are possible. So therefore, when you can understand the desire of the namer, therefore there is a path. There is either the path to aha or the path to oh-ho. Oh, I got another step to do. Oh, that's my that door keeps slamming in my face. Oh, I understand. Or, ah.
So at the beginning you said the value of, what was it? The value of something was understanding your desire of the namer.
Why is Adam, or the magician, a namer? To identify what is reflected by the depth.
Okay.
What value results from such naming? Understanding of the desire of the namer. So when you can name God, that means you have a way to look at who it is that is naming. Not that you got the right name and so therefore you're safe. But you can see what it is you want for safety by the way you name. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you see how useful that is? How beautiful that is? Yeah.
Is it also understanding the desire of what somebody else names? Or just yourself?
Well, I'm wondering why that would be a separate issue for you. Why is there a difference between yourself and someone else? You're the one who's perceiving both, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It seems to me you're the namer in any case. Which is interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes it a whole different level, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I'm making that separation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to say this, you know, I can just flip it off, but it's a very interesting consideration. And maybe by my flipping it off, I'm doing it an injustice, but it seemed to me that that was a way to describe it. So I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. Old lady started writing it. And then the next thing that you know about the high priestess is that when the namer is naming the path to transcendence, the high priestess will reflect that path, right? And when that is reflected back to the namer, that will awaken in the namer their knowledge that that is what they want. So much for ambivalence, it's out the window at that point. Isn't that true? And I think that's that was basically my personal thoughts on the high priestess that I wanted to bring out.
Can I ask you a question about the veil?
I don't know.
What is the veil?
Well, let's go to the classical now for that. We have a couple of books to use. I like both of these. We have this one, which is the weekly talks on the wisdom of the major arcana. It's called the Thursday Night Tarot. I recommend this book, actually. It's much easier to read than this one. It covers a lot of the same technical stuff. This covers a lot of technical stuff. This one is easier to read. Thanks to Bob for pointing it out to me. So Each of the cards is assigned not only a number, but also a letter. So this is Gimel, which is C in our alphabet. Alpha, Beta, Gimel. G C-I-M-E-L is the third letter. C actually, I don't want to get into the alphabet now, so don't go there. Okay, I won't. Okay, Gimel is camel. That's what it means, camel. And camel is basically the ship of the desert, right? Travels over the dunes. Is a water carrier in the desert. Excuse me. So those are all sort of parts of the meaning behind the high priestess. The high priestess is the one who carries all of the goodies from one place to another, the goodies of consciousness, goodies of a state of being. So therefore you can see why I'm saying she would be parallel to the Ayatana consciousness in Buddhism, or what Jung called, close as we can get it in our language, Jung called storehouse consciousness. That would be what Gimel is. And it has two pronunciations, Gim G, you know, it has can be geranium or gauze, G. Hard or soft, so it has a dual function, which is, I've spoken about, it can be used for the transcendent or it can be used for self-grasping. No problem for Gimel. Can work either way. The moon is the celestial body assigned to Gimel. And the moon, as you know, is a satellite of the earth. So again, you see where there's a subject, there's an object, like that. The dance together of subject-object, knowing and being. Has the meaning of the double letter Gimel is peace and strife. And again, you can see how that reflects to what I was saying about either it will take you to a higher understanding or not. He calls it in this book the subconscious, and I believe in this book he talks more about calls it the unconscious. It's a shame to call the universal mind unconscious, and he basically calls it the universal mind, which I call the state of being. It's a shame to call the universal mind unconscious, but we don't have better terminology at the present time. The whole point of our effort here is to involve ourselves consciously with the unconscious. And we are always, the conscious is always involved with the unconscious, but mostly we're unconscious of our consciousness being involved with the unconscious. So the idea is to become more aware of it, not do those separations, and actually believe them. Because if there's something you're separate from, you're always going to be fighting a war. Compassion means that you can be able to feel your frustration, your fear, your discouragement, your pain, your loss, your grief, and sit with it with kindness so that it comes into being, it passes away. Therefore, when you meet somebody who has frustration, who has fear, who has grief, who has anger, right? You know how to be with their passion. You have the space to be present with it. It doesn't threaten you. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Could compassion be anything else? Is compassion making everything all right? Well, good luck. God. Well, let's start with climate change. Let's make that all right by being compassionate. When you are compassionate, you have the space to see possible solutions. Because you're not just trying to get rid of something, your mind is open. So when you can meet those states in yourself, you have compassion. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point of our effort here is to involve ourselves consciously with the unconscious. The unconscious is not just a bunch of nothing. It happens to be the law of the universe. It's everything that has gone before. It is all coming into being and passing away to this point.
Which is that, the conscious?
The unconscious.
The unconscious. What was it?
That's the Torah. And so in this, she has a scroll on her lap, which they call the Torah, which is the writing of everything that has come into being, existed, and passed away. In a very cellular level, you could call it DNA, the consciousness that holds DNA. Has the record of everything. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's the Ayatollah.
Yeah. Same thing. And he says here, the high priestess is very tender-hearted. She protects you because you're her own. You can do anything to the unconscious and she'll still protect you. Might not feel like protection, but it will be. She explains to you as her child that you're born of mind, that you are mind. We always say, I have a mind, but we don't realize that we can say, I am mind. Mind is not like a muscle in the body. It's not a thing. We are not a thing, we are spirits. The nature of mind is the nature of spirit. So I was wishing I could get all of you to watch a week ago Tuesday, Nova Science Now. There's this woman who is largely responsible for this new branch of science called quorum sensing. Have you heard of that?
Uh-uh.
I believe Tarchin showed you a film of some
mm-hmm.
of the examples of it.
Mm-hmm.
That when a group of bacteria, for example, that are very simple beings, right? When they get together, when there's enough of them, they send out a message to each other and they work in community. So they do all different things. They change their shape. They change their actions. They change what they... Right? That every cell of being has a way of communicating and practicing knowing. That's in Buddhism called the speech body. And there is a level where all of those bodies are in a state of at-one-ment. That's called the mind-body in Buddhism. So they will have transcripts of that, and when I get back, my computer was down for a few days, so when I get back to Didsbury, I'm going to see if I can get a transcript, and I recommend you to get a transcript of that
mm-hmm.
program too, you know, on pbs.org. Nova Science Now. was the 9th, was it? Tuesday,
yep,
the 9th?
January the 9th.
Bonnie somebody or other. And it's called something about talking cells or something, was the subtitle. But Bonnie, what's her name? Anyway. And it's very interesting if you actually read that with a sense that that is happening in your own body, in your own room, in your own house, in your own neighborhood. There is a level where we are always in communication. And the thing that is most communicated is emotion. So if you are in fear, you're going to communicate fear, and you're going to get someone's fear reaction back. If you are in love, you're going to communicate love, and you're going to get somebody's love reaction back. If somebody is afraid of love, you're going to get that. But if you've got a strong enough focus to go even deeper, it could get very interesting. So this is the high priestess. It is the water of all possibility. All possibility. Not logical. But how everything has a connection. This is the high priestess. Kind of, excuse me, an interesting card, don't you think? Of course, the magician with the power to name. And the naming coming directly from a transcendent. Very interesting card, don't you think? So,
so if you got that card, it would be open to all possibility.
What do you mean you got that card?
Well, say
you're talking about readings.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about readings.
But I know, but say you just have that card, right?
It would depend on where it appeared in relationship to the other cards in the spread. I'm not going to talk about readings until we go through all 21, 22. I'm not. Because then we have to look at the four. Don't forget about my mother. Right? I had enough of that.
Oh, I didn't know she did cards.
Oh, she didn't.
Oh.
She just went directly to it. She didn't need the cards. Oh, you're going out. You better take this. What is it? Oh, it's bus tickets, but I'm not taking the bus. 3 hours later, I'm going to bring some fucking bus tickets. You know what kind of hell that was as a teenager? Like, no secrets? Like, going home? Oh, my God. Mom's at home. Oh, my God. Sky is blue. That was my favorite. That was my favorite. Sky is blue. Sky is blue. So I'm not talking about the readings or, you know, seeing what's going to happen to you or where you are. Like, nothing is more boring to me than that. And that has nothing to do with my upbringing or, oh, wait, maybe it does. Could that be the high priestess in action right there? I'm not going there. Have I made myself perfectly clear? Thank you. Water is the main symbol of Ki Tu. It flows from the robe of the high priestess and continues flowing through the whole tarot. And this is why, because water is the mysterious element that contains everything in solution. And it can precipitate anything out of itself. So one of the ways of describing the high priestess is the high priestess is a virgin because she cannot be made impure. There is nothing from which she is separate. It's beautiful, isn't it? Mm. Mm-hmm. says here, in like manner, mind holds all possibilities. Chemistry would call mind a supersaturated solution. Things precipitate or gel out of it. And isn't that true of consciousness? It is said to, the solution itself does not change. Mind does not change. It is said to be forever virginal. The essential virginity of Ki Tu holds all things in potential. So at the moment what we have is when you study the tarot, you usually start from the Fool, which you look at, then a magician, high priestess, empress, emperor. Because what you're doing is you're starting with the transcendent, and then you're looking at the beginning of naming consciousness, separate consciousness, naming. So the namer or the male aspect is like a vertical, and being is like a horizontal. So the naming aspect, being drawn to what is to be named, or what is to be called forth, right? The being. So here's the magician, here's the high priestess, here's the emperor, and here's the empress. Does that make sense? This is the magician before meeting the water of all possibility. This is the water of all possibility. You can see this is a cross. This isn't actually connected to me here, right? Mm-hmm. I need a blackboard. So this is the magician before meeting the water of all possibility. This is the water of all possibility before being touched by the magician. This is this center point that is totally either or, neither nor, total magic. And then here is the emperor after the birth, which happens when the high priestess becomes the empress, after having had contact with the magician, a new birth arises, right? With a new birth, the namer disappears for a little while, so the magician goes out of the room and then comes right back as the emperor. The emperor comes in, the magician is gone, then the magician will come back, another birth. So this is like split second action. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. So when you start to study the tarot, you usually start from that point. When you're going to use the tarot as a meditation, you would start from the last card, which is the world, which is where we are, deep in the world, right? And work your way back to the point where you realize the magus, the high priestess, the magus, the fool. So they're like, again, the two ways of moving with tarot. You don't usually find that written anywhere. So I just wanted to introduce that at the beginning. The mind is endlessly fruitful. And learning how to use that fruitfulness is a spiritual practice. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. When we learn how to use that fruitfulness is when you could say we're creative. When you are creative, it does not mean that you have to be in a particular medium like the arts or music or, you know. It means that your interaction between knowing and being is connected. continuously bringing forth new life, reflecting the transcendent. So you could be a housewife and be creative. Whatever your work. And you have met people who are creative, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I met physicists who are creative. David Bohm, very creative. Fun to talk to, too. And he talks in this book about science being actually, comes from alchemy, and alchemy was a search for the nature of reality, and that science is actually the same, continues in that tradition, a search for the nature of reality. And if you take a close look at what has happened in science, in every case, these people have intuited something about nature. And they've had the patience to express it to their fellow beings in words, formula, or whatever. Right? Not only a sense of something to find, but the words to look for it, to explain it. Namer, a namer of the unnamed. In tarot terms, they have received their information from the high priestess. They've gone to the unnameable and asked a question, and something has reflected back, and they've named it. So in Buddhism, when they talk about perception, they say as far as the sixfold sense fields extend, so far extends the world of illusion. If you have a question, you will find an answer. The really interesting thing to explore is your answer reflecting separation or union? Which way is the wand pointing, you know? So it says, in tarot terms, they have received their information from the high priestess. And then he says, this rule has no exceptions. Which means that you and I, who are just as good as anybody else, are connected to the divine mind and perfectly capable of receiving information and guidance from within. That's very beautiful, isn't it? Absolutely. And the more of us all are together with the same hope, the stronger the hope, the stronger the result.
Sort of like says that we're all God, because we all have it.
That's right. And that sounds good to me. You may ask, if I'm connected to this wonderful divine mind, if I'm so magical, how come my life doesn't work? The sages say you have to get rid of distractions and still your mind. You know, not just cut off the part that you're afraid of. You have to still your mind, so that your fears and hopes can come up and your mind is still still and still still. Your mind remains in some type of stillness. We have to do that. That's, you know, there's no choice. So the sages say that you have to get rid of distractions and still your mind in order to pick up the information that comes from the high priestess. And why I'm making that point about you have to not have part of your mind still and the other part sort of hold, you know, you can't like sort of keep a part of your mind still and refuse to think about a lot of things. Because if you do, the answer from the high priestess is going to reflect that division. But you're not going to necessarily interpret it like that. Is that clear? The magician key teaches us that we must concentrate and be dedicated to make real progress. You don't have to be a scientist to read the reality that is hidden in the universal mind. You could be an artist, any kind of creative person. If you would like to apply the technique of using this power, whose immensity is really quite beyond our intellectual grasp. The power in your being is quite beyond your intellectual grasp. The high priestess will initiate you into how to go about it. All you got to do is ask with simplicity and stillness. As you would expect, you don't go into her holy temple and yell, ta-da, here I am. Hello, high priestess, I'm here for tea. You can go in this way, but you'll probably be escorted off the premises in a hurry. There have always been temple guardians whose job it is to take the over-exuberant by the ear. And some people are over-exuberant and they just want an answer to this. They don't want an answer to that, you know. There's something about the Holy of Holies that needs peace and quiet to be appreciated. It's a presence, not a thing. The High Priestess represents the element of transcendence par excellence in the tarot. What's more, she's the receptacle of all the information we would dearly love to get our greedy little hands on. In this philosophy, there is no difference between yourself and myself and the divine life. There are not two realities, there is only one. There is only one mind. The illusion is that our mind is different from that mind, but that is not so. In the strongest possible words, I would like you to know that you have a direct connection with a power that has been responsible for all the progress that the human race has ever experienced. This connection is demonstrable in history and in your own life. And it's more than sufficient to keep you going. You're not going to run out. And everything is there. Everything on the scroll. You may be sure that there is a memory bank that underlies the cosmic logos. That memory bank is always functioning perfectly. We are in the middle of a grand operation. We don't need anybody to explain it to us because we experience it with our own eyes and ears and so forth. It's just a matter of looking and we can see lots of magnificent things going on. On the scroll, the words Torah reveals that tarot speaks of the law of nature or Isis. The high priestess is Isis veiled in this picture. And is icy unveiled in the star card, which is key 17. Isis is very much like alma mater, as we call our universities, alma mater, the all-embracing mother. Integrates all of life's different departments and brings them into unity. So she is uniting intelligence. She is the telemetry that ties everything together. Not in a technical way up there, but by the speech body, by consciousness itself. Kether is being on the very deepest level. Everything that can be seen, measured, or thought about, everything in the domain of the high priestess has this substratum. Nothing is separate from the high priestess. In a different way than nothing is separate from the fool. This is in relation to consciousness, the high priestess. And the fool isn't in relation with anything. You see, I'm sure, many similarities between the Buddhist tradition and here again. The entire display of all the mental activities in the universe is like a great river without any limits. We are immersed in this enormous stream of phenomena. Now, one of our problems is to understand that we are not the river, that we are something else again. Our spirit is not what it sees. It is able to look and keep itself dry while it's in the water, which is a paradox. But that's the way it is. And then someone asked, when I look at the world of things around me, am I actually looking at memory? I think that if you just change the word memory to mind, that would be true. When I'm looking at the world of things around me, you're actually looking at mind. All of us. All. And so, you know, in Buddhism they talk about perception, and that perception is essentially empty. Right? You've heard that?
Mm-hmm.
And it means it's essentially empty of a fixed identity. Mm-hmm. And you know that because one day you look out the window and perceive it as a beautiful day. Next day you look out the window and you perceive it as an ugly day. Maybe the day you thought was beautiful was like a tornado outside, but you just loved the way the wind blew because you were happy that day. Next day it's absolutely gorgeous, but you look out and it's like, why is the sun shining? Why is everybody happy? They should all go back to bed. I mean, blow up the world, right? Is that true? Have you, any of you ever done that in your lives? Same scene, different thing, right? So what is it that you're looking at? You're looking at mind. It's self looking at mind. You're looking at a mental creation and calling it reality. Perception is a mental creation. The reason you can grasp it at all is that you understand mental creations. That's how we understand. When we're 3 months old, you're going to get so sick of this by the time I finally die. Or like 2 months old, or 6 weeks old, I can't even remember how old it is now anymore. And you're lying in your crib, and you're going, you've never seen a hand before. You don't know hand yet, but it's already a perception is there, and that changes everything, doesn't it? When you're 5 years old and your friend's over and you're allowed to turn the kitchen tables over and drape a big blanket over them and have your own. A chair can be anything, right? But once you have to sit on it and you're not allowed to turn it and the sheets go in, it's a totally different perception, isn't it? And you don't even think back, do you? What's that chair doing upside down? Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm doing the obvious ones. Imagine how many perceptions. looking around this room, thousands of views. What do we all believe?
It's interesting.
It's all here. The reason you can, you're looking at a mental creation, the reason you can grasp it at all is that you understand mental creation. You have a kinship with this kind of magic, because that's sympathetic magic, because I experienced it before, therefore I can relate to it. Otherwise it would be totally meaningless to you. Most people have the idea that they're living on the physical plane, which is in gross or error. You get input from the physical plane, but your tidy little quarters are in the mind. This matrix is the only place you'll ever live. In India, they use the word manas, from which we derive the word man. Manas means mind. The word mandala comes from the same root. You might say the universe remembers itself in reproduction. I love that line. Isn't that beautiful? Cosmic memory is a vast treasure trove that we can utilize when we create. So it reminds me of T.S. Eliot. So here I am in the middle way, having had 20 years largely wasted, and trying to make sense out of words, right? Trying to write poetry. And every attempt is a whole new start and a different kind of failure. Because one has only learned to get the better of words for things one no longer has to say, or the way in which one no longer wishes to say them. And what we have to say has already been written once or twice or more by men we cannot hope to emulate. That is not, but for us, there is only the trying. The rest is not our business. It isn't a matter of doing it the best. Because it's already been done thousands of times, no matter what it is. It is a matter of being involved in the creative process with a sense of joy. That's what matters. And so this is, there is always resistance from the medium when we create. This is the necessary meeting of fire, of water. The equal arm cross on the breast of the high priestess. Can't see it so well on this one, can you? Can you see that? Oh, you've got a bigger one, Bob. You hold that up. See the cross that she's got? So I was talking to you about the cross. The equal arm cross, you can pass it around, on the breast of the high priestess symbolizes the balance of these forces. Of the creative force and the medium that is going to be used for creation. The cross, the balance of forces goes like this. In a restaurant you order, that's the idea, and you pay, that's the energy. This is the yang or fire phase. When the food comes out, that's the substantiality, the yin or water phase. Notice that you don't need to tell the cook how to prepare the meal. The high priestess already has the cookbook on her lap. In other words, we don't have to worry about the mechanics of response. The universe always responds to our initiative, to our magician aspect. Always. If it's not responding, it's pointing to the ambivalence of the asker. And this very center of the cross is called the point of beauty in tarot. I don't know if he covers this here. This cross in key two is exactly the same as Hecate, the Greek goddess Hecate. Crossroads, she was a patroness of magic, definitely an aspect of the high priestess. The uniting intelligence encompasses all polarities. So therefore the center part is called, the point is called the point of beauty. I won't burden you with enumerating all the polarities, but you can start with male and female, positive and negative, day and night, yin and yang, artist and clay. Exhaust yourself with all the opposites anytime you want. They're legion. A veil stretches between the two pillars. Behind the veil is that lively abstraction we call the Ein Sof Ur. The whole tree of life is embroidered on the veil itself, reminding us of the pattern of things. And the trinity of the totality of the transcendent is Ein Sof, Ein Sof Ur. They're like three in the Hebrew tradition and going way back. They're the three aspects of the Trinity that later Christianity became the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost and changed it slightly. But we'll get to that some other time. How are we doing here? Is this interesting to you? Mm-hmm. So you think there's anything in this Western mystery stuff? Think it's worth looking at? What do you think? One or two things of interest to you? Mm-hmm. Few? All right. That's good. I hate to bore you. The horns of her headgear touch the two embroidered pomegranates. Oh no, then we won't go there. The method for progressing is that you use desire to stay with the things you like rather than bounce around and repeat cycles. Or in Buddhism, all beings desire pleasure. The reason this method works so well is that the desire to experience the great self, the profound self, the transcendent, is the root of all desires. My beloved teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, used to say, all desire leads to transcendence. And then I would think to myself, yeah, but how many lifetimes? Which is a reasonable question too, isn't it? Mm-hmm. How many times do I have to go and sit in the dining room of the bus depot and have an extra meal before I get on the next bus? Distract myself with a love affair. It's talking a lot about the tree here, and I really don't think we'll get into the tree. I think I'll introduce the cards to you, and I'll leave you to study the tree on your own. Is that reasonable? Because really this is only an introduction unless sometime we decide to actually perform the cards, use each one as a full meditation and do that as a group, which is certainly a wonderful thing to do. there's a lot of information in here, but I don't see us particularly going into it tonight. So does that give you a sense of the High Priestess? Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Why is there a black and a white pillar? What do they represent?
Knowing and being, the two opposites. And she's in the middle, so she is the meeting point between all opposites, just as the cross on her breasts represent the heart being the point of beauty. The real seat of your consciousness is your heart. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Do you want to pass that those three around so people can look at another High Priestess too? Ouch! That would be my knee.
What deck are those other ones from?
It's called The Golden Dawn, and there is a book that describes the cards from The Golden Dawn. There's several tarot decks available. This was quite a famous group of people that studied the tarot and worked did very beautiful work with it in England sometime in the early 1900s. And I believe Aleister Crowley, who's infamous or famous, depending, was for quite a while a member of this group. Eventually he broke off, and I understand he lived in Victoria for a while. Mm-hmm. This house, a friend of mine used to love to take me by his old house and point out the attic. And interesting character. So at one time I was really young. You know, I knew nothing at all about, there's a tree too, the second, third one up from here, from the back. So that's the tree of life. That is on the drawing of the high priest, the veil behind the high priestess. I never saw a tarot until I met my beloved teacher, Ananda Bodhi. He introduced me to it. And then I got, I kept thinking, yeah, but I don't care about this, because I was enamored of the I Ching. I used to hitchhike around North America with a copy of the I Ching and my proper amount of dope. And then meeting the tarot was really interesting because I got to see the joy of the architecture of the West and the holiness of it. You know, I suddenly, because I went to a lot of different cities and downtown areas, it was easier to sleep on the streets, so that was where a lot of really beautiful buildings were built, almost like, you know, the old buildings, usually in the slums. I guess you guys haven't noticed this so much in your lifestyle. But that quality of, like, when I began to look at, I mean, I wasn't doing it that much in those days, but I remembered some of those buildings and when I started looking at tarot. And it was just really wonderful for me to walk through a city and see, you know, the High Priestess manifesting through the magician in architecture, and walk into some banks where, like, you know, the windows and the light and the way they were done were, like, so reflective of such a profound, and Europe, eh? Wow. And Europe, isn't that like incredible? Those of you who've been to Europe, the cathedrals. Mm-hmm. Incredible, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Walking into those places and you feel your whole consciousness shift because of the, you know, they call it, what do they call it? Sacred geometry. How things are designed and planned. You can feel your whole consciousness shift when you walk into those spaces. And that's all the kind of thing that's studied when you really study in depth, study the tarot. It's like the building blocks, they're called, aren't they? The building blocks. Isn't that what it says on the box there? Turn it around.
Secret Order of the Golden Dawn.
Okay. But in fact, this is very much the representative of the mystery traditions that were at one time not such mystery traditions. In the West. Anyway, questions, answers, comments, complaints? Yes.
Were they called mystery traditions because they were had to go sort of underground? And
well, that certainly was true. There are also mystery traditions because, like, you know, I mean, in the time of the Greeks, you know, and the different gods and things, that some initiations are. One of the most important rules of a mystery school, and certainly became more important when there was a lot of persecution of mystery schools, is that you don't talk about an initiation.
For protection?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, for protection of the purity of the initiation. Just the same as in the Tibetan tradition, you know, you don't talk about an initiation to someone who hasn't had it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is the whole experience for the first time of having it and being there that allows the symbols and the ritual and the order in which things are produced to make an impression on the mind, and the result will come from the high priestess when the magician names. Now this initiation and the high priestess of your being will bring a result which will give the magician a reflex recall of that which gave him, you know, that from, you know, that transcendent state. And an initiation is a mystery until you receive it, because it's trying to bring you beyond subject-object duality to that which is transcendent. So the most important reason why those things were submerged is because that's how it works,
mm-hmm.
or suppressed. Then when there became political reasons, a lot of you know hangings and persecutions and excommunications and things going on with all the politics that happened in Europe around those times, then it became even more of a mystery. And there was a lot of it was, you know, almost lost. So things like the cards, our deck of cards comes from the tarot. To keep it around.
Mm-hmm.
Any of you ever play solitaire? Does that answer you?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Have we got all the cards here? Thank you for your great compassion. May all beings be well and happy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.